Okay.
All right, welcome to another episode of A Documentary Podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Catherine.
And on today's episode...
It's very dramatic.
It's very...
Because we're talking about Hollywood, sort of.
We're talking about Hollywood! Sorry, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So we're talking about two films that are both on the theme of Los Angeles, California, the entertainment industry,
and people's dreams with getting there.
Yeah.
The dreams that don't always come to fruition.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to talk about is called California Dreams. It's on Amazon Prime. And then the other one we're going to talk about is Los Angeles Plays Itself.
It's on Canopy.
Yeah, that one is on Canopy. That is
saddest
true.
Thing happened to me. I'm out of Canopy views for the month.
Damn.
Yeah, damn. So I'm going to have to start paying for movies.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I wish Netflix didn't... I wish they had a better selection these days. I feel like it's really lacking.
It's just, unless you want to watch true crime documentaries.
Yeah, that's true.
They're doing well. But yeah, besides that, not much.
Good point. I remember at one point they had like all the best documentaries and then...
They did. And I think they've moved to... A lot of them are on Amazon now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Nice. Well, before we get into our main films, let's talk about things we've been watching or recommendations.
Mm-hmm. So I recently went and saw... God, this is going to be tongue twister for me. Aquarella. It's currently in theaters, or at least it's through the Landmark theaters, and it's a documentary about sort of the raw beauty and extravagance of water, especially like ice and glaciers, and then the ocean. So as someone said, if you like watching ice melt for an hour and a half, this movie's for you. And I do, so.
But yeah, it's definitely... I really want to see that. It looks crazy.
The one thing I'm going to pre-warn everyone is that it has one of the worst soundtracks of any film I've ever seen.
Okay, so I was worried about that because I saw the trailer and I was like,
well, so you think, so it's all good. There's like no music to begin with. You're just watching people in the or somewhere off of Greenland living in these ice fields. And then like the glaciers come in and start falling and then it's just like screamo music. Yeah. And it's just like you're in this meditative state, just like, wow, what is it? And then all of a sudden it pulls you out. It will wake you up. So if you get tired, it like keeps you awake in the film. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is they only do it like twice. So it makes watching it worth it. But it would have been one of my favorite films if that didn't exist in it.
Yeah, because I remember in the trailer, I was like, what is this music?
Yeah, there's a good 10 minutes of that in the movie.
Damn. Oh, man. Okay. I still want to see it, but I'm just...
Still see it. And I'd say you need to see it on a big screen to sort of... It's kind of like a more artistic IMAX film.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
I do get worried about, you know, why with the music.
And I think it was probably the director, and like people couldn't tell him no. There's probably a lot of people in the room who are like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
But.
Well, the film I'm going to talk about is I just went and saw it as part of Art House Day, which happened across the nation yesterday. And the film that I went and saw that was part of it is this film by Brett Story. And I've talked about her other film before, The Prison in 12 Landscapes. And The Prison in 12 Landscapes was probably one of my favorite documentaries of recent time. She also did a documentary about Amazon workers for Laura Poitras their Field of Vision project that they do. And I would definitely suggest going and watching that. Oh yeah, it's called Camper Force. So it's about all these people that like these older people generally that live in campers and then they go around working for Amazon temporarily at these warehouses around the country. And I think Brett Story right now is like one of the most exciting political filmmakers. And I went and saw her newest film yesterday, which is called The Hottest August. And I think that the way they described it was so interesting, but it was, oh, I think that the tagline was, it's a film about climate change told through the lens of collective anxiety.
Oh God, that sounds like a horror film.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But the way it's done is so beautiful. The way they use the voiceover, her cinematography, the way that she tells a story in such a simple way without using a lot of text and facts and all that stuff. It's very like Wiseman-esque, but she gets a little more surreal in this one, which I really, really liked. It kind of reminded me a little bit of that film I talked about a while ago called Rat Film, but but not quite as surrealistic. It's a little more Wiseman-esque. But damn, like, it was so exciting to watch. It really made me want to, like, make my film. And I don't know, it was just exciting. It was, it felt like a revelation. So I definitely want to do a whole episode about it once you get to see it.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not going to say too much else about it, but yeah, it was a really good film. If you get a chance, go see The Hottest August. It's in super limited release right now, and I'm sure it'll, you know.
It must be here. It must be coming here then, if it's made it out there.
Yeah, and it only played one day here. It was just for this. It was just for this like art house day yesterday. But okay. I'm sure it'll play in Denver. Like,
yeah. Well, the film festival's coming up, so hopefully then.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely everyone out there, if you get a chance, see The Hottest August. And still, I still can't recommend The Prison and 12 Landscapes enough as well. That's just such a good film.
And I've got one more to quickly shout out.
Yeah.
This was an accidental watch, 306 Hollywood, because as we were trying to find film or documentaries related to LA, I just assumed because Hollywood was in the title, it would be about LA. It isn't at all.
I still need to watch that.
It's good. I think it's on Netflix, and it's what I love about
it. It's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, not Netflix. Yeah. But it's super stylized, and it has to deal with how like objects create memories, and just telling the story. These two siblings tell the story of their grandmother via the stuff in her home, and so it's very well visually thought out. And like the cinematography is great, and more of an uplifting one compared to the other ones we've probably been talking about lately. But I always love how objects are associated with so many stories and memories, and this film I think does a really good job of depicting that.
Nice. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
It's probably a much easier watch than LA Plays itself.
Yeah. I think I suggested both of those films, and at first, I kind of regretted recommending Los Angeles Plays Itself, but... yeah, let's just get into the main films today. And I think we should start with California Dreams.
Yes.
Because I want to... This is going to give away the arc of this podcast, but I want to start on a good note, get to the bad stuff, and then end on a good note.
Yes. Yeah, so just a forewarning, we're going to give away probably all of California Dreams just because there's now a lot of controversy, I find, associated with it.
Yeah, and I'm just hearing about this, so I'm going to learn along with you all.
So we may, pre-warning, there may be a bit of frustration.
Tons of spoilers. Tons of spoilers. If you haven't seen this and you care about seeing it, stop listening now.
And then come listen after you watch it.
Yeah, and then come back and be frustrated with us.
Yes.
Yeah, so California Dreams. Let's get a synopsis in there.
So it's a keyword simulated verite documentary about this guy Corey and his friends who have these Hollywood aspirations, and you just go on this journey with them through their lives as they're attempting to break into Hollywood. And it's kind of at first a very sort of sad look, because you come to realize very quickly it's not a realistic dream for a lot of them. So how Hollywood kind of plays this symbol of hope in their lives.
Oh man, I just saw this headline. South by Southwest, California Dreams is one of the most cruel films of recent memory.
It is really cool. So I'll say, like, on first watching, it has an incredible character arc. Because at first...
No, it says you're... cruel.
Oh, cruel. Oh, I think cool.
No, it is.
Both work.
It is
both,
cool. Both I mean, work. I suggest...
It's really cool.
I suggest we watch it after I started it, not knowing what it was. And we'll keep singing it forever just because... Sorry. No, I started it and I was just like, oh, the cinematography is interesting and this sad. This mm-hmm. man looks sad. This might be a good movie.
But it's very, actually, Cruel was one of the first things I thought about it. Because when you meet Corey and these other characters, you think, and it's their characters, because they're not, I found out recently, they're playing characters that are based off of themselves, though, that a lot of them are kind of on the edges of society, can't hold down jobs, can't have relationships, and it almost seems like they're making fun of these people in a way, and that, like, why are you making a film about them trying to get to Hollywood when we all know that's never going to happen? And so I found it very hard to watch, and I felt very uncomfortable.
Same here, and going in admitting that I was a little tricked, or 100% tricked, thinking this was a documentary. I obviously, like, questioned it a lot while I was watching it, because, and I read stuff that said it blended the lines between documentary and...
It's like a docu-fiction. That's what I read a lot of.
Yeah, and there are a lot of, like, scenes that are, like, acted out and things like that, and I was like, okay, so this is doing, like, a casting JonBenet, Kate Plays Itself kind of thing. And then, you know, before we start recording, you know, you kind of drop the bomb on me a little bit that it's all fake.
Yeah, so apparently, because similarly, I thought that, like, oh, it's, like, the film I love, All These Sleepless Nights, it's something like that, where it's, like, you found these people, you put them in, like, situations, and you film them. Well, what's happened is the director, Mike Ott, has actually worked with this guy named Zachariah, and Zachariah is an aspiring actor, but is also, like, a collaborator with Ott, and so he's playing a dumbed-down, as I said, a dumbed-down version of himself. So this person doesn't even really exist. And what I loved most about the film before I found this out was his arc, in that you learn to love him, and he's really trying, but you're like, are you just playing a stupid person? Like, you feel really gypped, and, like, it doesn't seem very sensitive to do this.
Yeah,
or it's very insensitive.
And I remember watching, like, when he's trying to fill out his Taco Bell application or whatever, and just being like, oh man, this is, like, really strange in a way that, like, I was uncomfortable, and I also felt really bad for this kid. And then I was also like, did this need to be included in the film? You know, like, and then now, like seeing this is like, yeah, this is cruel. Like, this thing, this review on Substream magazine says, California Dreams is one of the most cruel films I have ever had the displeasure of watching. Billed as a documentary comedy, I cannot off the top of my head name any documentary that is so actively embarrassing and manipulative of its subjects.
It is. And I'm curious as to whether, like, not the Corey character, but the other people, are they in on it? Because the one thing I loved about this film is they have these, like, really long, vulnerably intimate conversations where people are just talking about, they're lying about how they've hooked up with women, but then talking about how they've been sexually assaulted, all these things that are just, like, you wouldn't even tell a closest friend some of this stuff. So I'm really hoping now that all of this, it would be terrible, all of this was written, and that they weren't playing in to these people to get them to reveal these intimate secrets.
Yeah.
Because that's not cool.
Yeah, and I know that when I was first watching it, I was, like, I was pretty struck by the visual style and thinking it was, like, really beautiful and, like, actually, like, finding some care for all these people, you know? And actually, like, starting to care about them a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And just, like, rooting for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, just thinking this filmmaker's an asshole.
Yeah.
And that kind of came across a little bit, but now, like, really looking at it, it's just, you know, we haven't really done a negative review of a film.
Well, we, know. Oh yeah, because we specifically avoided Herzog.
Yeah. But.
It sucks because I was about to give it a really positive review because my first impression is kind of my impression now. And then they did a good job about, like, really diving into the characters and being mm-hmm. like, you know what? No, it's as people, we need dreams. We need things to aspire to that keep us going, even if they're not realistic. We all have those fake senses of hope in our life. And that's just what Hollywood is providing them right now. That's also why I hate Hollywood most of the time, is because it does provide a false sense of hope.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, good for them. But now I'm like, no, this is, should have stuck with my first impression, like the gut feeling on this film.
Yeah, I am curious now, like, what in this film was factual and mm-hmm. like what in the film was more planned.
Because I do think you need to sort of know, it's okay to leave things ambiguous and like not know what truth is and not, as long as you can, it feels authentic. But and they have one part in the film where Corey's on this conversation with this German director who isn't real, but is trying to get him like a part in a film. And then you hear the word cut and he starts like crying. So it does pull you out and you realize that like, oh, some of this is, you know, fabricated or staged, but you would never expect it to be to the level it is. And I don't think you should have to read a Variety article to know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about this now.
Yeah, I don't.
Because I did, like, yeah. remember when I was watching it, thinking that it did kind of, some things really bothered me about it, just from a mm-hmm. filmmaker perspective. And then now, with all the ambiguity around it, it's just like,
you can't think clearly on it anymore. Like, all my notes I had about, oh, it's about the American dream, and, like, is it a facade because of all the American flag motifs? I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't even want to talk about that anymore because I'm so mad.
Yeah, and then there's this, like, so if you ever need to explain to someone what the concept of punching down is in comedy, California Dreams should be your go-to example of how it is hurtful and not in the least humorous.
Yeah. And as someone who, like, I think the hybrid genre is becoming more popular right now, but there's a lot of criticism, I think, of it. This is not going to help the argument for why, for this genre. I think it's going to, yeah, it's the reason sort of why you shouldn't do this, even though I would love to make something like, not like this, but within.
Yeah, I think that there's
genre one day.
There's a way to do it that is like really interesting, and like I would say one of the best examples is Kate Plays Herself. Kate, is that what it's called? Kate Plays Herself, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. Where it's a actor studying for a role in a documentary, or an actor studying for a role that she's going to play, and they're making a documentary. Where she's preparing for this role, but the film mm-hmm. is never going to be made. It's just kind of about the process that an actor would go through to tell the story of the person that she's supposed to be playing.
Yeah, and then if you think of like casting JonBenet, mm-hmm. yes, there was a lot of criticism on how the people who were in the film had no clue this was going to be a documentary, but the audience, which is not good, but the audience the entire time knows what the directors are doing. Yeah. So you're fully aware. Or like one of my favorites, All These Sleepless Nights. Mm-hmm. You don't fully know if it's a fiction or a documentary, but what they do is it's just about what it feels like to be with your youth coming to an end, being in your mm-hmm. mid-20s. So it's nothing this like intense. It's just kids running around Warsaw. So you can't really offend anyone by mm-hmm. like blurring the lines here. But this is people's lives and like their secrets and so much vulnerability that they're exploiting.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like more along the lines of like what reality TV does. You know, they take people's stories.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then they manipulate them.
It's like an art house reality show.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh man.
Yeah.
This took a turn. This took a very fast
I know.
Turn.
I feel so like I came in to this review, like expecting to talk good things about this movie.
Uh-huh.
And, like, as I'm sitting here, like, you know, looking at some of these articles and kind of diving more into this research I should have done earlier,
Well, I did some, but not a lot, because I was like, I want to have my own opinions on it. But, man, yeah. Do your research.
Yeah.
It's hard, because I would still recommend this for people. Would you recommend this for people to watch now?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's worth watching, and I think...
There's some really great things about it. Let's talk about some of the good things.
Okay. They know how to structure a film incredibly well.
Yeah, the story is there.
It's very much there. The cinematography is very impressive, which I guess you can do because you're planning everything out.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense. I was like, how do they get all these shots like this? Like,
I love the location choices, too.
Yeah.
Like, they'll put them in, like, a field or in a house, and you're like, why is he there? But it just somehow adds another level to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the cinematography is great. The music. The whole feel of the movie is really great. And then, again, like, the characters actually really are, like, you feel really, really bad for them, and you wonder, you know... what mm-hmm. the ethics behind it are, you know, while you're watching it. But you do genuinely care for the people, and you're really rooting for them to, you know, get their stuff together.
Yeah.
But, you know, there definitely was some, like, uncomfortable stuff that you're like, man, why is the filmmaker, like... So there's a scene with, like, some sexual stuff where the filmmaker, like, really, like, keeps pushing it, and the main character... You know, who usually I would say, like, the subject of the film or whatever, but apparently now we know that he's a actor, you know, acting a role pretty much. There's some stuff where they start talking about these, like, sexual things that happen to him that you could tell really bother him to talk about. And the filmmaker just pushing and pushing and pushing. And you're just like, dude, fucking calm down.
And that's the thing, is it's like that wasn't... I don't think very needed. Like, I don't think you should ever push your subject that much, because there's a conversation earlier that the character Corey is having with friend Patrick, who has also never had a lot of experience with women, and they're talking about what they've done with women, and via their lack of knowledge, or their lack of knowledge really comes through with what they're saying.
Yeah.
So we all know they're not that experienced, or some things have probably happened. So that second part is not needed, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
We already can, it's already implied. So I think that was just,
And it was unneeded, and also,
but I still, like, appreciated those car conversations, because I think a lot of them were pretty real, and it's very rare that I think in film, even documentary, that you can just see someone reveal that much and, like, reveal their darkest secrets. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if we should do that, because it's hard to even watch.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, those were the hardest scenes to watch for sure, and I just remember sitting there being like, oh man, like... Oh, now looking at it, though, like, if that one character was an actor and the other person is a real person, then it just feels even more fucked up.
I'm really, it's just weird to say it, but I'm hoping they're all actors.
Me too. I would rather it all be fake, just because some of this personal stuff that's revealed.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Another good part, which I thought was a really well-composed scene, was the crying Oscar speech in the hotel room. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's Carolyn, one of his friends, and she apparently was in a movie at one point. If this film, I don't know what's real anymore. And so she's sitting in a hotel room giving her Oscar speech, crying, and it's just the saddest location, and you know that's never going to happen. But they have, like, the Oscar music playing over. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I loved the combination of that. Because they said it as if she was really giving it, and then there's just, like, you know that's never going to happen, and she also knows it's never going to happen, and it just comes together quite well. That's one good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of actually good stuff in this, but... Yeah.
It's tainted.
I'm in a weird spot. I don't know how much more I can say about this movie.
Okay, let's go to the... So we'll stay... Well, review-wise, not good, not cool what they did.
I would say,
but go watch it.
Yeah, because I'm like looking at some of these articles and I'm just like, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff, if it's more realistic, it just feels more mean than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I think I would love for them to come out, and usually I don't like knowing all the tricks or what's behind everything, but for the directors or the director to say what was real and what wasn't, because I think that would make me feel a bit more, just a little more satisfied and not uncomfortable with what I watched.
Yeah, totally. And to feel a little tricked, you know. Mm-hmm. That book that I let you borrow, Speaking Truth with Film.
Oh yeah.
Speaking Truth with Film. It goes a lot over this kind of subject matter of mm-hmm. of like the lines between realism, like the real stuff in the documentary, and mixing fiction in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that this would definitely cross that line of like into the murky area of
It's definitely murky,
just manipulative trickery that might be kind of meaner than it is interesting, you know what I mean? It's kind of cynical, I think. Mm-hmm. It seems like, now that I'm like looking at it, it just seems cynical, and part of it might be some ego of feeling like I'm tricked or whatever, but also just as a filmmaker, like, I don't really want to manipulate people like that.
I think if the subject matter hadn't been as vulnerable or as emotional, I wouldn't feel as bad.
Yeah.
Because it
was fun being tricked with the Blair Witch Project. I thought that was a great trick.
Yep. There's I think it just depends on what the subject matter or themes are, and how much you're playing with people's lives. And I think they used people for their own gains to make a film. And I don't think you should ever make a film for yourself. You should make it for the people you're making it about.
Yeah, and if you are making a film for yourself, you know, that's like a narrative or something.
Yeah.
Like a fictional film or whatever, you know, or like a YouTube video that's about yourself. Like, that's like one thing. But to use other people to like, I don't know, it just feels gross. So, on that note, let's start with the film that like I started off really hating and kind of fell in love with it as it went along. And that is L.A. Plays Itself. So here's the synopsis. It's called Los Angeles Plays Itself. Sorry, because he doesn't like it when people say L.A. So Los Angeles Plays Itself, consisting mostly of shots from other films, this documentary discusses the many representations of the city of Los Angeles in film and television. Professor Tom Anderson compares the city as it exists in real life with its depictions on screen to examine how LA and its massive community have been misrepresented over the years. In addition to critical analysis, Anderson explains how directors portray the city itself as a character, and he also delves into LA's dark secrets.
And I'll say key word there is professor. The director is a professor, and this literally plays like a video essay. Like, if you were to do a thesis on Los Angeles, this is what you would get.
Yeah.
But this is like if the top student made a video essay.
Yeah. And I will say that, like, when it started out, I was like, oh my God, this guy's voice. Like,
I hated it at first. Yeah. I was like, I can't listen to Warren, it's also 3 hours, right?
Yes. Yes. And I actually texted Catherine, you know, everyone out there.
Oh, yeah.
I texted Catherine like maybe 10 minutes into this, like, I hate this movie. Why did we do this?
And I think I said same thing. I had the same experience.
Yeah. But so it's really interesting because it does start off. It definitely feels like a lecture with just like examples. And it's like, okay.
And like at first I disagreed with a lot of what he was saying, so I found it very hard to get into it. But then once you start realizing like, oh, he's building this argument, there's more to it, then I was like, okay, I started coming around.
Yeah. And like, it starts off pretty slowly.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of literally just feels like a glorified YouTube video where there's a bunch of shots from movies and he's talking about Los Angeles and how it's portrayed in the movies, you know, and showing all these different shots and et cetera, and then, you know, waxing poetic about, like, if documentary can use drama to tell the story of life, then can narrative use, or can we use narrative as documentary to show the, you know, view of Los Angeles? And at first I was like, oh my God, why?
Yeah.
Why did I get myself into this?
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, it gets better like an hour in. And I was like, what? An hour in? And then I looked at it and it was like 2 hours and 45 minutes. I was like, what? But genuinely, as it goes on, it starts to turn into this, like, you know, something that transcends the essay. Mm-hmm. I feel like it starts to feel transformative. It starts to get a rhythm, and then it builds on, and then you're kind of curious, like, okay, so what else?
What is he going to talk about next?
Yeah. And it's hard to, like, share all the examples because he goes over so many films.
Well, but I was about to say, I was like, I could go over my notes, but I'm like, ooh, great architectural analysis. Oh, great city. As it's like, it's very, if you, from the notes, or like, if you were to, like you're saying, talk about it, it just sounds kind of like a boring list of anything you could analyze about Los Angeles. But the way he edits and paces the film, I think it's, like, to make this interesting, mm-hmm. like, he knows how to edit.
Absolutely.
Or whoever edited this. And, like, it's such a varied tempo. Like, at first, it's really slow, and often, like, for the more historical stuff, it's, like, these long scenes. But then when he gets to faster, like, he'll cut it really quickly to sort of get you more engaged, and then it'll slow down and then pick up. And it's just, it's so effortlessly edited.
Yeah, it feels like, again, it feels transcendental in a way. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the parts that really, like, connected with me was when they were showing Dragnet, and then he was comparing, like, the stiffness of the direction and transcendental cinematic view of you know, Ozu-esque filmmaking in Dragnet. I was like, shit, I never thought about Dragnet like that before. And just and just the myth of the Los Angeles police, and, like, anyway, I think there's so much in this film. I think we should just start off with, like, things that really stuck out to us.
Okay, for me, it was the analysis of Double Indemnity. Mm. As someone who also studied that in school and probably wrote a paper on it at one point, this, seeing it visually with the scenes and his point of view, that was one of my favorite parts. And I think that's when I was like, okay, yes, I can do this for 3 hours.
Yeah, mine was Dragnet, so that's funny, because whenever he brought up, like, the comparison with Ozu and transcendental cinema and, like, all this stuff, and then I just kind of bought in, like, okay, this is going to go to some interesting places. And and really, like, as somebody who does appreciate architecture, that I don't know too much about it, but just, like, the way that these films use, like, modern architecture for, like, the homes of villains, you know? And I think that, you know, people see, like, modern architecture sometimes, and they're like, oh, that feels cold, and that doesn't feel homey and stuff. And I think that that's a misrepresentation of what modern architecture was about. And then you start to see, like, oh, maybe it came from, like, these films, you know? Why do we think Spanish colonial style that's so fake, like, looks cool? I don't, per se, but some people do. They're like, oh, I'm going to live in, like, a Spanish, you know, home with, like... And then this, like, it kind of just shows you how movies not only shaped Los Angeles, but shapes all of our ideas.
Yep. Or there, it's kind of a cyclical pattern, though, because I think the movies will latch on to one part of society, like a like subculture, something small, and then blow it out of proportion, and then society then acts again on that, and it's just like this cycle. But I will say, Hollywood has a huge power over what we see and what we think and how we live our lives.
Absolutely. And I think and I think that's, like, one of the things that is so interesting about this film, because you kind of start to see how these ideas are explored and shaped, and then how they might have affected you over the years, like little things like the Hollywood sign. You know,
which I find funny that he loves the Hollywood sign. I thought he would hate it.
And I'm somebody, too, who, like, you know, maybe hates the fakeness of Hollywood, but I'm intrigued by that sign because it's such a silly thing. And it's, like, not even that, like, it's weirdly, like you, it's anticlimactic in a way. Like, you go up and look at it, and for some reason in my head, it was, like, lit up at night, and, like, there were spotlights on it or something. And then you get there, and it was getting dark, and I was like, oh, wait, you can't. There's no lights up there at all. You
can't even see it. what movie studio has the Hollywood, like, before their films, has the Hollywood sign and then the two lights and the dun-dun-dun?
Yeah.
It's one of them does.
Yeah.
But that's crazy, because it's like, yeah, our image is being depicted by the films. And, like, I was just, like, so impressed by the amount of films that he put into this movie. And then you think, wow, there are so many films out there, and these are ones that just take place in Los Angeles. Like, the amount that is created, it's just, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah. And that Hollywood sign, too, because I remember having this, like, effect of when I went to LA last time, I finally went up to the Hollywood sign and just seeing how, like, thin it was and how much smaller it is than you think it is when you see it on TV. And it just kind of, like, to me was, like, almost like a metaphor for, like, the idea of Hollywood in general. Like, you know, we have this, like, giant idea that it's, like, this monolithic beast, you know, but it's really just this, like, one part of the industry, which he talks a little bit about, you know, like, most people in LA don't work in entertainment. But the story of LA is everyone works in entertainment. Everyone wants to be a filmmaker or whatever. And he's like, you know, I forgot what the statistic was, but there was a big statistic about, you know, a majority of people there, like, that's not, like, what they're interested in doing. And there's this whole other Los Angeles that we forget about. And I think every city has its, like, myths like that, you know? Like, living here in Omaha, you hear the story a lot where everybody thinks it's, like, flyover country and that Omaha has nothing going on and, like, all this stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of, like, interesting things that happened here, you know?
Or being from Seattle, everyone always asks, like, have you seen Sleepless in Seattle? Like, and I'm like, yes, I have. No, Tom Hanks is not my neighbor. But it is, but then it's like the stereo, it's always funny, like, if you think about, like, how true, like, the stereotypes have to come from somewhere, and it's like, yes, it is a gray city that's depressing and rains all the time and people love coffee, but that doesn't mean everyone there fits into that category. I'd say, like, most people do, and I guess, like, LA,
but most LA people has a similar like relationship.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. No, it
but
is.
It would be really cool if they, if he did this on different cities.
Yeah.
Because not just, or like how they're depicted, I guess, via film or TV, and like how that accurately or misaccurately represents the city itself. Because it was a really interesting way to look or examine something.
Yeah, I liked listening to him talking about like the director tourists, and that was pretty interesting. And he did talk a little bit about New York City with like Woody Allen and stuff. And and that was pretty interesting. Because I feel like you could do this film as well for New York.
It'd be a very different film. And I think he says that at one point.
I don't remember exactly what he says. I think he makes the argument that Los Angeles is harder to make a film about because it's so disparate.
Yeah, and it's a bunch of neighbor. It's like a sprawling area with a bunch of people living there. It's not that it's slowly conjoined. It's not like there's not a heart of the city.
Yeah, and like even downtown isn't really a place that most people go.
No.
Whereas in New York, you know, you go to Manhattan and there's millions of people walking around, and and New York is like that city, you know, where it's like the one city in the U.S. that is like crowded with people walking around and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in like in Los Angeles Plays itself, they talk a lot about how not having a car in the films is like punishment, you know. And it was interesting too that like they were talking about the myth of Los Angeles, that no one takes public transportation, but yet they were having a problem with bus overcrowding. And just like little things like that, that like there's all these myths about us, whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's about humans in general, no matter what city you're from, what culture you're from, there's all these myths. And, you know, we're a species that tells stories. And this kind of ties in with California Dreams itself as well. You know, we're a species that tells stories, and that's how we like communicate with each other. And cinema really is like such a powerful medium for that, and it's also a powerful myth making machine.
It's interesting. It's like, yeah, it's the peak way, I think, to connect with another person's life or another person's story. But as we saw with California Dreams, like that story you're connecting to, you may not be connecting to something that's real.
Yeah. Do you want to know a thought I had a few times during this film? And what? It's kind of playing in with California Dreams too, is that I was watching this film and it almost made me hate narrative cinema a little bit. I don't know what it was. There was just something that I was like, maybe it's just like this period I'm at in my life where it's just like,
yeah,
fictional films for some reason. Like, it all started to ring so hollow and feel like so contrived while I was watching this, because it's all such, yeah, it's all such bullshit.
That's true.
And I started having that thought while I was watching this. I was like, do I like hate narrative films right now? Do I like
think, yeah,
do I think documentary is like the most interesting thing right now?
Because, well, I do think you could easily argue documentary is the most interesting. Yeah. But I don't know. I guess I still love narrative because for me, it's it's not as much work. Sometimes, yeah, I'm like, yeah.
No, there is that. No, there is that. And I think that like part of like filmmaking, and this movie like really points it out, maybe not directly, but part of filmmaking is like all about like narrative filmmaking specifically is all about cutting corners. You know, mm-hmm, it's all about like, you know, it doesn't matter if the geography works, you just got to get the shots and et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't matter if like this is realistic, because, you know, we need this to tell the story, mm-hmm, and we need to use this building as this. And oh, the, you know, LAX is like kind of ugly, so let's shoot it at the restaurant next to LAX. And, you, yeah, know, little things like that. And it kind of made me just like almost feel like I'm feeling with California Dreams, or just kind of like a little disgusted with all the fakeness and everything. But I don't know.
But
that,
I,
that
I
was
don't
just
know.
A weird
I,
thought I had.
I could see that. But then there's always like, because you chose, like, there's still choices of the fake things, mm-hmm, and you choose what's the most truthful and authentic to your story. So I think you can still find within, like, narrative fictional films that there is truth behind decisions, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, part of it was, like, the films that they talked about are all, you like, pretty big films, you know?
Yes.
And Hollywood, yeah, films, and... And then as I was like having those thoughts and we were talking, you know, about, mm-hmm, you know, in our last episode, we recorded on the same day, but it came out earlier on the Daniel Johnston one, when I was talking about Richard Linklater, you know, that's someone who I think makes narrative fictional films that feel more real than even, mm-hmm, some documentaries that I see.
Yep.
And they feel more honest than most documentaries that I see, because it feels like someone who genuinely cares about people and stories,
mm-hmm,
and wants to explore that and explore ideas and what people talk about. And a lot of like cinema on this level, you know, is really kind of like what this film is about. The more interesting thing is like what's happening like
around them.
Yeah, it's the place. It's like what you talk about with documentary all the time, like the place is like more interesting than a lot of these films are.
And similar to Linklater, that's why I love Kelly Reichardt so much.
It's, oh, like, my god, I love her.
Yes. I rewatched Meek's Cutoff again. Like, I missed her new film First Cow, which is at Telluride, and I'm like, this better come to theaters near me. But that, like, similarly, her films almost seem like documentaries, because they're just like snapshots of what it was actually like to live in a certain place or time or just situation. And like, mm-hmm, there's all these she brings all the unspoken moments to the surface, and you can just sit in them and like feel what's going on. And I think it's like, it's more truthful than, yeah, a lot of documentaries. So I think those fictional filmmakers are out there. They're just,
totally,
you have to find them.
Well, that's the part, like, Ozu, I think, is like that, Kelly Reichardt, mm-hmm, like, I mean, Certain Women is one of the most beautiful films, like, and it feels so just truthful and caring, and I think that's, I think that's what I just want in films right now, is I want things that, mm-hmm, feel like they care, and I think that's why I'm so mad about California Dreams, is because it doesn't feel like it cares about anything.
It's
it's like the epitome of, like, our generation's, like, cynicism, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think regardless of what is real and what's not in that film, yeah, there is a lack of compassion.
Yeah, because even if those characters were fake, they're not treated very nicely anyway. And as beautiful, and a lot of these, like, you know, films and Los Angeles plays itself. Like, a lot of these films are so beautiful in so many ways, mm-hmm. you know, but a lot of them are also very cynical.
Well, what they said, which this is one of the quotes I did write down, it said, Hollywood has a guilty pleasure of destroying itself, and the audience enjoys it. And that's true. Think
those disaster film scenes,
those disaster, mm-hmm. they're intense, and it's like people kind of like to live in that chaos. And then they also talk about the savior complex, and we all want to be saved. And like, these filmmakers are destroying the place they live in. It's like, what is that saying about them? Like, they're destroying their homes and their films. Like, you probably don't have a very good relation with where you live then. Like, if I were to ever make a film about Seattle, I would never destroy it. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of shows that, like, toxicity that exists in the industry, especially down there.
I can't wait till we talk about The Hottest August, because so much of what okay. we're talking about is just reminding me of so much stuff I loved about this movie. But yeah, Los Angeles Plays Itself, it really starts off rough, and then it does come into its own, and it really makes you mm-hmm. think about a lot of things. That was just yeah. one of the things. I don't necessarily hate film. I'm not saying that. I've loved film for a long time. That was just a thought that popped into my head a couple times when certain scenes were being acted out. I was just like, ugh, you know, mm. it kind of just like the manipulation was just kind of like frustrating to me.
Yeah. And well, if we want to. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's a bit of a tangent, or it's a tangent to something else. But if we want a happier, more compassionate film, I think The Biggest Little Farm is now out.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And that will be a very happy, positive, no one's being exploited, cute animals. Yeah. Happiness. Cool. Film.
Nice. I definitely want to watch that. I noticed it was on iTunes, and I was going to suggest we do it soon. So
yes,
maybe we should double Sweetgrass and that.
Oh, that would be a good idea. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, let's do that, because I just rewatched Sweetgrass and another film that is just, yeah, so beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I have too much else to say about Los Angeles Plays Itself.
No, I think it's one of those films you need to watch and just sort of get into, be ready for. And I will say, I think you have to either love Los Angeles or love film to watch this, though. It's definitely, it's a cringy term, but I think you kind of have to be a cinephile in a sense to want to watch this.
And I feel fortunate that I actually kind of do love LA. And
yeah,
whenever I've been there, I've enjoyed it, and I like the people that I get to hang out with, and it feels creative when I'm there, and I like some of the fakeness of like visiting like studio lots and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
and like kind of just enjoying some of that. I do hate some of the more touristy things. Like, I'd hate going to Hollywood Boulevard, and I really hate going where all the stars are and all that stuff.
Yeah, and they agree with that in the film, too.
Yeah, none of that is fun for me, but, like, some of the stuff, like, going to the observatory in Griffith Park, mm-hmm. and that stuff is, like, actually kind of fun, and it's wild to see so many people up there. Like, hiking up to the Hollywood sign was, like, really fun. Like, next time I go there, I'll definitely want to go run around there, and yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff about it. There's a lot of great architecture. There's a lot, you know, and it feels really disjointed, but I think mm-hmm. that's interesting. And and there's like some cool stuff in the neighborhoods. There's like good coffee. There's, you know, I don't know. There's good stuff there. There's good stuff anywhere. And that's one mm-hmm. of the things I like about this film, is like every city has its bad stuff and its good stuff. You know, Omaha,
yeah.
where I live right now, I'm learning, has a lot of really bad things here, and there's also a lot of really great community. There's a lot of really great subculture. There's a lot mm-hmm. of creativity here. There's a lot of artists here, just like anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I'd say the same thing about Denver. Like, I hated it at first, and then there's always something. If you put the time in to really look at a place and like live it, like now I love it. And I think as of now, I really don't like LA, and this film did make me appreciate it a lot more and realize there's more to it. And so it's like, okay, maybe it isn't a horrible place.
Yeah, it's like anywhere else. It's yeah. bad and good, and I think this film does a good yeah. job at like talking about not only the bad and good of like mm-hmm. Los Angeles, but the bad and good of like any city, country, state, and humanity in general.
Yeah,
And all through the guise of, or all through like looking at the relationships with cinema and the material mm-hmm. world, you know.
Yeah.
Dialectical materialism. I think that's all we got for today. So,
yep.
You can find us on Instagram at A Documentary Podcast.
Our website, adocumentarypodcast.com.
And I just rebuilt adocumentarycompany.com. Go there.
Check that out, yep. And then our Instagrams, mine's at CMS Moments.
And mine is at Joshua LeBure. And the music is by Timothy DeCans. Is that all we say?
Yeah. Cool. I think thanks for listening. And yeah, next week we'll probably be talking about Sweetgrass and Biggest Little Farm. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we should do a second episode. And you should try your hardest to watch The Hottest August if we can find
yes.
it. Yes. You might that not be able to, but goddamn, it's so good.
So hopefully that'll be like end of October. We can maybe do that because that's when the Denver Film Festival starts.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And if not, we'll find some other films to do.
Exactly. Well, I think there's plenty out there.
There's a few.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see y'all in a couple weeks.